Anne took some time to get James settled, and then left him immersed in the latest files while she hurried after Finn. The Durandal hadn't gone far down the corridor. He was still trying to get rid of Dukat. The clone rep was as nervous as he was ambitious, and needed a lot of reassuring. As Finn said, more than once, if he'd known the little creep was going to be this clingy, he'd have approached someone else. But it was too late now. They were stuck with each other, for the time being. Finn saw Anne approaching, and used that as an excuse to send Dukat on his way. The clone rep left reluctantly. Finn smiled on Anne as she joined him.
And how's our dear child? Studying hard and bettering himself, I hope?
He'll be ready for the interview. He always is. You're too hard on him, Finn.
Oh, it's for his own good. If he screws up in public, it won't be just our necks on the chopping block. The public's always had a special loathing for clone imposters, especially now they've invested so much hope and faith in the return of dear James. Something's bothering you, Anne, and I don't think it's James. What's the matter?
I don't know. It's just, I don't feel right. This new me, I thought it was what I wanted, but now it feels like a trick. A mask that everyone else can see through.
You're beautiful now. You've blossomed. This is what you've always looked like inside.
Then why can't I ever relax? Why do I feel like a fraud all the time? Why can't I ever just enjoy it?
Finn took her firmly by the arms and made her look at him.
Listen to me, Anne. You can be whatever you want to be. You can remake your life, your personality, and your destiny just like I did. You just have to be strong enough to take what you want. Other people will believe what you want them to believe if you're confident enough and strong enough in your belief. You are what you can make other people believe you are. Trust me on this, Anne. I've had a lot of experience in this field. Soon people will forget there ever was another Anne. Just believe in yourself. I believe in you.
Anne slowly nodded, and Finn let go of her. She managed a small, tremulous smile.
Thank you. You didn't have to do that.
I know. But even monsters aren't monsters all the time.
They strolled off down the corridor together, comfortably close, but not actually touching. People passing by bowed low to them both, and kept well out of their way. They had both become great and glorious and larger than life, and they looked very much like they belonged in the ornate corridors of the Imperial Palace, as though anywhere else would have been unworthy of them.
You're taking a lot on yourself these days. Are you sure you can juggle all these groups you want to work with? Pure Humanity and the Church Militant are bad enough, but these others you want to bring in, they're not stupid, and they're very dangerous. How long do you think you can keep these fanatics from finding out that you're just using them for your own ends?
As long as it takes. All I have to do is play them off against each other, and they'll be too busy trying to do each other down that they'll never see what I'm really up to until it's far too late.
But to approach the Hellfire Club and the Shadow Court? You watch yourself, Finn. These people are vile and treacherous.
So am I. But I'm smarter and sharper than they are, because I don't share their obsessions. And because I'm the only one who knows everything that's going on, I'm the only one who sees the big picture. I'll always be able to outthink them, because I'll always be one step ahead.
Anne thought about that for a while.
At least they all have their causes. They believe in something. What do you believe in, Finn?
He smiled dazzlingly.
I believe in me.
Anne decided it was time to change the subject.
Do we have any fresh news on the Terror?
Nothing new. Presumably, it's still on a course toward its next projected target, Heracles IV. We can't be sure until it emerges into our space again. But assuming it holds its course, even traveling at sublight speed, it should hit Heracles IV in a matter of months. They're still working on beefing up their defenses and bankrupting their whole economy to pay for state-of-the-art shields and weaponry. The latest hot rumor is that the Swart Alfair of Mogmoor, those enigmatic bastards, have supplied them with some entirely new forms of weaponry for an exorbitant price, along with a handful of observers to see how well they work. If I was Heracles IV, I'd be sure to keep the receipt somewhere handy. I've arranged for some observers of my own, just in case this new weaponry really does do all the marvelous things Mogmore claims it can. But I don't think I'll hold my breath.
Do you think these extra defenses will make any difference?
I don't know, but whatever happens, it'll be a learning experience.
Finn, that's cold-blooded even for you.
Stick to what you're best at. That's what I always say.
But what if none of it works? Do you have any plans on how to stop the terror?
Oh, yes. I always have plans.
Oh, you always say that. Why won't you ever tell me what you've got planned? Don't you trust me after all we've done and achieved together?
Hush, hush. You're getting loud. I don't want to raise false hopes until I'm sure what I've got in mind will work. We have time. It'll be ages until the Terra can penetrate this far into the Empire. Now, my turn to change the subject, I think. I need to know what's in your heart, dear Anne. Do you feel at all guilty about removing Douglas from the throne and replacing him with James? I mean, you and Douglas were friends for a long time.
So were you and Douglas.
No, not really. Stop evading the question. Is deposing Douglas as king going to be a problem for you?
Anne met his gaze firmly.
No, he let me down. He let us all down. He didn't have the guts to be the kind of king he'd promised he'd be, to be the legend I would have made of him. I won't back losers anymore.
And what about Lewis, the valiant Deathstalker?
Anne's gaze was very cold now.
He ran away.
And your oldest and dearest friend, the lovely Jessamine?
I made her the perfect deal. She would have been queen and a legend alongside Douglas. I had it all worked out. And she threw it all away. We could have all been glorious. But in the end, they were all too weak. Let them all die and rot. James will be king, our king, and we will rule through him. Until the time comes when we can have him put safely aside. And then you shall be king, Finn. You're strong enough to rule this empire. Strong enough to be a legend.
I could make you queen, if you wanted.
No. I've always felt most comfortable operating from the shadows.
Finn took her chin in his hand and made her look at him again.
That's the old Anne speaking.
Anne jerked her chin out of his hand.
I'm not afraid of the spotlight. If you like, and if you can find the time, you can come watch me as I brief the media this afternoon. I'm going to destroy what's left of Lewis and Jessamine's reputations and piss on the ashes while I'm at it.
I wouldn't miss it for worlds.
Ladies and gentlemen of the press, I have some disturbing information.
It had to be said, Anne gave one of her very best performances at that afternoon's press conference. She stood tall and proud before the assembled media pack, looked them straight in the eye, and lied.
...designed to obscure the sordid truths concerning Jessamine Flowers and Lewis Deathstalker.
She spread her web of damning lies and half-truths with just the right mixture of forthright efficiency and diffident duty. As the reporters listened with widening eyes and dropping jaws, and thoroughly trashed Jessamine's past with detailed evidence of the kind only an old and trusted friend could provide. Lovers were named and shamed, old scandals unearthed, long-standing rumors confirmed, and all of it carefully presented in the very worst light. Anne had plenty of material to work with. She'd been Jessamine's friend and confidant from the very beginnings of her career, and they'd kept no secrets from each other. Anne took everything she'd been told in secret and added as many half-truths, distortions, and outrageous lies as she thought she could get away with. And Jessamine had led a very busy private life down the years. The fan magazines never knew the half of it. Jessamine's many lovers had included men and women, before, during, and after her several marriages, and many of those favored had gone on to become prominent people in show business and politics. The sheer number of past lovers shocked the public, and the media happily fanned the outrage into open hysteria. Her recordings were destroyed, and she was burned in effigy in several cities. Many of the named lovers went into hiding to protect themselves. Not all of those named were actually guilty, of course. Finn had provided Anne with a list of people he'd like brought down, people who had opposed him or might prove a problem in the future, and Anne had nodded and said no problem, and added as many as she thought she could get away with. They denied it, but then, as Anne said to the reporters, well, they would, wouldn't they? One of those publicly named and shamed was the Member of Parliament for Malediction, Meera Puri. Finn had grown tired of her endless questioning of him in the House, not least because she was edging towards the truth. But this time, the mud wouldn't stick. Meera Puri was vehement and detailed in her defense, and Anne was finally forced to issue a retraction, if not an apology. Finn shrugged in private. You can't expect to get everyone. He'd just have to try harder next time. Anne didn't have any real dirt on Lewis Deathstalker, so she and Finn made some up. Since no one knew anything about Lewis's private life, they felt free to go to town and really did a job on him. Lewis, they said, had faked most of his so-called triumphs with the help of false agents from the rookery. Anne produced as witnesses some of the very people who'd helped establish Finn's recent reputation, and as a result, they were very convincing. They clearly knew what they were talking about. Having delivered their damning evidence, they then disappeared back into the rookery before they could be questioned or challenged by any of Lewis's few remaining supporters. The people listened, and the people believed, already so shocked and stunned by Lewis's and Jessamine's treason and flight that they were ready to believe anything. Anne kept on, adding more names and places and details, and the more outrageous the claims became, the more ready people were to believe them. Anne claimed that both Lewis and Jessamine had secretly been members of the notorious Shadow Court, and the public nodded wisely and said, yes, of course, it all makes sense now. On Viramond, Lewis's family denied it all on his behalf, but Clan Deathstalker no longer had the influence it once had. Indeed, Parliament was threatening to take the revered name of Deathstalker away from them and bestow it on some more deserving branch of cousins. Tim Highbury, who had once hosted Lewis's tribute site, was found hanged. Anne was genuinely upset about that. She'd known and worked with the earnest young man in the past. She liked him. She angrily accused Finn of setting it up, but for once, he hadn't. He hadn't had to. With his hero destroyed and fatally smeared, Tim Highbury hadn't wanted to live anymore. And so it went, for week after week. Anne fed dirt to the media, James appeared on all the right shows and charmed everybody, and Finn went suddenly missing. It caught Anne by surprise. She went to him for one of their routine strategy meetings, and his office was empty. She found a brief note saying he'd had to go to Hayden right away.
The bastard! How could he just sworn off and leave me right in the middle of things? What could possibly be so important that he had to leave me in the lurch without any warning?
The news broke a few days later, and then she understood at once. It seemed the scientists working on Hayden, studying the madness maze from what they fervently hoped was a safe distance, had been keeping a secret. 10,000 brave souls had passed through the madness maze some 200 years earlier, only to die horribly, which was why the maze had been placed off limits ever since. Only now, that turned out to be not strictly true. 12 men and women had survived. Strangely gifted and completely insane, they were still alive after 2 centuries, confined to 1 special annex of the maze. Finally, the news had got out. The 12 were no longer a secret.
Damn it all to hell. Of course Finn had to go to Hayden and see these people for himself. Because if people can go through the madness maze and survive, that changes everything.
Finn Durandal headed for Hayden on the Star Cruiser Halcyon, captained by one Elspeth Wagner. Both she and the rest of the crew were Finn's people, loyal directly to him rather than to pure humanity and the Church Militant. Finn trusted them, in as much as he trusted anyone. He had to get to Hayden first. He didn't want Church Militant fanatics anywhere near the Madness Maze or the 12 survivors. The Church demanded access to the maze as a central part of their dogma, and this news would only inflame them. Finn needed to learn as much as he could, and then get the hell off planet and slap down a major quarantine around Hayden so that no one else could get in. Knowledge was power. As for pure humanity, God alone knew what those crazy bastards would do. Could you still be pure after you'd been through the maze and it had worked its changes on you? Finn wouldn't put it past them to try to turn their transmutation engines on Hayden. So, in and out, and then the quarantine. Finn paced impatiently back and forth in his cabin as the fastest ship in the Imperial fleet took him to Hayden, that ancient and treacherous world of transformation and dark miracles, and apparently even more secrets than had been suspected. He studied the limited available information over and over again. 12 survivors out of 10,000, all of them very powerful, all of them extremely insane, still alive and thriving after 2 centuries of captivity. Finn owed his advanced knowledge to the robots of Shub, who were repaying him for the access he'd got them to the maze. Human scientists had chosen to keep the survivors secret, but the AIs of Shub didn't believe in withholding data. It seemed the survivors exhibited powers and abilities far beyond any of the Empire's espers, and the then King and Queen, Robert and Constance, had backed the scientists to the hilt when the news was first presented to them. They didn't want the survivors to be used as weapons by terrorists, or to give false hope to all those people still clamoring to be allowed into the maze. 12 crazy uber-espers were enough, especially since they were all decidedly disturbing. Finn wasn't traveling alone. He brought with him one of his creatures from the rookery, a certain Dr. Happy. However, since the good doctor was also, in his own way, pretty damn disturbing, Finn mostly insisted Dr. Happy remain in his own cabin, if only so he wouldn't freak the rest of the crew. Dr. Happy was a dealer in drugs and potions, as much alchemist as scientist, who'd raised altering states of consciousness to an art form. From love potions to battle drugs, uppers, downers, and the occasional trip sideways, Dr. Happy had more ways of messing with your brain than a butcher with a new cleaver and a really nasty sense of humor. The good doctor could make you feel any way he wanted, which included some emotions that had been considered purely theoretical until he came along. Dr. Happy could make you sing in colors, plate lightning, or speak in tongues with people who weren't even in the same time zone as you. For the right price, of course. The man himself was unnaturally tall, unhealthily slender, and was never seen out of one of his severely stained white lab coats. He wore protective gloves at all times, and never touched his own stock. Probably because he didn't need to, he was born wired. He had a long, thin face with a wide, toothy grin, bulging eyes, and a shock of frizzy white hair that stuck out like a halo. His hair always looked like he tugged at it a lot, and his eyes changed color according to his mood. He giggled more than was acceptable, darted agitatedly around, and bit his fingernails savagely when he got excited. His eyeballs were yellow as urine, and his teeth weren't much better. He smelled of something antiseptic. Finn brought him along in the hopes the good doctor would be able to come up with some extreme new drug to calm and or control the 12 survivors, or failing that, the human scientists working with them. Finn felt very strongly that he didn't want any more surprises coming out of Hayden. His alliance with the robots of Shub gave him some measure of control, but that wasn't enough. He wanted to slam the lid down hard on Hayden and the maze, and for that, he needed Dr. Happy. That meant he had to spend some time discussing matters with the good doctor, a man so lacking in moral and ethical principles or any form of restraint that even Finn felt uncomfortable around him. So Finn sat in his comfortable chair in his comfortable cabin as Dr. Happy capered around him, examining everything with disquieting enthusiasm, clutching his bony hands to his sunken chest. He hadn't wanted to leave his precious underground laboratory on Logris, but Finn had tempted him out with thoughts of the amazing new drugs he might be able to derive from the altered biochemistry of the 12 survivors. Plus, he would be allowed to treat the survivors with any drug he fancied, in doses that would undoubtedly kill a normal human, just to see what happened. Finn believed in experimentation, particularly on other people. And Finn said that if Dr. Happy didn't come with him, he would kill the good doctor, right there and then. Dr. Happy believed him. People tended to believe Finn when he said things like that. Dr. Happy spun around several times and fixed Finn with goggling eyes.
Are we nearly there yet? No? Hey-ho! I am so excited at the possibilities before us. I am. Ooh, such potential. Yes. I have always believed that Esper abilities have their basis in biochemical patterns in the brain, but the Oversoul would never allow me to experiment on any of their bodies. All right, I wanted to do it while the bodies were still alive, but what a bunch of wimps. Some people just don't appreciate the miracles of science. Ooh. Just let me at those 12 survivors with my scalpels and my genetic sequences. Yes. From the deepest secrets of their various vitals, I will concoct such potions as will push humanity up the evolutionary ladder so fast it'll blow away all the rungs.
I hear you've been running experiments in the ship's med bay again. I thought we'd agreed that you were not to test any of your concoctions on members of the crew, and particularly not on anyone in navigation.
Dr. Happy stuck out his lower lip sulkily.
I have to keep my hand in, Sir Durandal. No one's died yet, have they? And I'm sure that nice young lieutenant will stop screaming any day now. I must practice my art. I must. Oh, my word, yes. I must be at my very best when I come face to face with the Madness Maze and begin my greatest work.
His eyes became dreamy as his long bony fingers tangled together, and his toothy grin became actually wistful.
Ooh, such miracles I shall work in the twisted minds and altered flesh of the maze survivors. I shall change and transform the very nature of human consciousness, stretching it in undreamed of directions. I shall warp conceptual reality and storm the very barricades of heaven and hell. Yes. I do wish I could persuade you to try some small part of my inventory. Only the very broadest of perceptions will allow you to appreciate the probabilities inherent in the maze and its creations. We must never allow our humanity to hold us back from what our ambition can conceive. Are you sure I can't tempt you to try a little something?
Quite sure. And if you try slipping something into my coffee again, I will remonstrate with you most severely. You do remember what happened the last time I had to remonstrate with you, don't you?
Yes. I still feel you overreacted somewhat.
Just be grateful there was a regeneration tank handy. Next time, I won't stop with your extremities. I might need you, but I don't necessarily need you intact.
The Halcyon came at last to Hayden and took up a high orbit. The robots representing the AIs of Shub below were to teleport Finn and Dr. Happy down to the scientist's observation post, right on the edge of the maze. Finn wasn't at all happy about entrusting his well-being to anyone other than himself, but he kept quiet about it. Partly because he needed Shub to see him as a trusted and trusting ally, and partly because he was so very eager to see the maze and the survivors.
Oh, that was delightful.
Do shut up.
They materialized in what looked like just another steel-walled corridor in any scientific outpost, but they had to be there on Hayden only a few moments to realize that they had come to a very strange place. Everything felt different, eerie, threatening. Finn's hand dropped immediately to the gun at his side. He could feel all the hair standing up on his arms and the back of his neck, as though he'd just entered the lobby of a haunted house. Part of him wanted to turn and run and keep running, which was a shock to Finn. He'd never felt that way before, about anyone or anything. He pushed the feeling aside. He hadn't come this far to leave empty-handed. Dr. Happy stood very still, gnawing on a fingernail, his eyes wider than ever. He was trying to smile, but his heart wasn't in it. A human scientist in full blast armor came around the corner at the end of the corridor, and Finn almost shot him on sight. He made himself take his hand away from his gun. Whatever the threat here was, it definitely wasn't human. One of the blue steel robots from Shub came around the corner to join the human scientist, and Finn relaxed a little. If anyone understood the true nature of this unnatural place, it would be Shub. Finn walked forward, nodded courteously to the robot, and stuck out his hand to the human scientist, who shook it grudgingly. He was short and bald and scowling, and didn't look at all happy to have visitors.
"Welcome to Hayden, Sir Gerendahl. It's an honor to meet you, of course, but I could wish it had been under more optimal circumstances. I have to tell you that I'm not at all happy about this situation. The existence of the 12 survivors was kept secret for good reason. But Shub went over my head, so... What is that behind you?"
Finn didn't bother to turn around.
"That is Dr. Happy. And whatever disturbing thing he's doing, don't worry, because he's going to stop it right now. Unless he wants me to slap him silly."
"Charmed to be here. Absolutely charmed. Is there a toilet anywhere handy?"
"Shut up."
Finn gave the human scientist his best sincere look.
"For better or worse, the cat is out of the bag, Doctor."
"Dr. Ramirez. Well, if someone had to find out, I suppose I should be glad that it's someone like you who got here first. Let me show you around, and then maybe you'll understand why we kept our secret so long."
He led them off, back down the corridor and around the corner, into another identical corridor.
"This is all part of the observation structure my predecessors built directly around the maze, deep under the surface of Hayden. Normally, we don't come this deep and venture so close to the maze itself. But the survivors can only be appreciated up close and personal."
"I take it the blast armor you're wearing isn't just a fashion statement. How dangerous is it down here?"
"To your body or your soul?" "We take every precaution we can when dealing with the survivors, Sir Champion. Theoretically, they're completely secure, but normal scientific theories tend to break down around the madness maze. You should be safe enough as long as you stick close to me, and don't do or touch anything without checking with me first."
Finn looked at the robots.
"Is that your opinion, too?"
"Every worthwhile endeavor involves risk."
"I just know I'm going to love it here."
"I knew we never should have agreed to Shub being involved here."
"Now, now. You must learn to work alongside your Shub colleagues, Dr. Ramirez, or I will have you removed from Hayden and replace you with someone who understands their duty to the Empire. At least Shub doesn't withhold valuable information."
"That's not fair. We've shared every discovery that was safe to reveal. But if there's one thing we've learned the hard way in our time here, it's that we have to proceed with the utmost caution. Just being around the maze is enough to drive perfectly reputable scientists crazy. This place gives you ideas. Dangerous ideas. There's something about the maze. About its nature."
"We do not have to proceed so cautiously. The nature of the maze does not frighten us, and these remote-controlled bodies can be exposed to any risk. They are easily replaced. Perhaps robots should replace human scientists completely, since humans are so physically and mentally weak."
"Boys, boys, don't fight. Still, the robot has a point, Dr. Ramirez. What have you been doing here that justifies your continued presence?"
"Well, we've been examining the remains of the abandoned Hayden Man city nearby, and we've uncovered some startling new additions to Hayden Man and human history. At first, we were mostly concerned with recovering new technologies from the city, and indeed we still are, but just recently we stumbled across a stash of data crystals whose contents shed a whole new light on what we thought we knew about the origin of the Hayden Men. The basis remains the same. A group of humanity's finest scientists came here long ago and passed through the madness maze. Most died horribly, but a few came out mentally transformed. These new intellectual giants made themselves into cyborgs and became the progenitors of the Hayden Man race, of infamous legend. But we now know one of these surviving scientists followed a very different path. She was already an Esper before she entered the maze, and when she came out, her psionic abilities had been boosted and altered almost beyond belief. She had become humanity's first Uber Esper."
"What were the nature of her new abilities?"
"According to the data crystals, she had become an extraordinarily powerful telepath, capable of forcing other Espers into a gestalt consciousness, which she could then dominate. Through the gestalt, all their powers became increased, and she was able to wield them all. She traveled the Empire, collecting other espers and absorbing them into her gestalt. The new Hayden men followed her progress with fascination, but they were still human enough to be scared of her. When she had enough espers under her control, she returned to Hayden and forced them all through the madness maze. The Hayden men kept out of her way. It also seems she used her powerful mind to drive all the other espers crazy before putting them into the maze. Perhaps she thought it would protect them, perhaps she thought it would help her control them afterwards. Either way, most of the espers died, and the few that emerged were monsters.
We all have monsters within us.
How true. Do carry on, Dr. Ramirez.
I think you know who I'm talking about. These monsters were the legendary Uber Espers, the Shadow Freak, the Grey Train, Blue Hellfire, Screaming Silence, the Spider Harps, the terrible minds that run the Esper Liberation Front these days. The original Uber Esper had intended to use the power of these minds to force all Espers into one great Esper consciousness, like our Oversoul today, but under her control. But for the first time, her ambition exceeded her abilities. The pressure of so many minds fighting to be free destroyed her. The Gestalt collapsed, the woman died, and what remained of her mind was sucked into the mass subconscious of the Espers, later to emerge as the Mater Mundi. The other Uber Espers disappeared, fearful of being controlled again, and developed their own agenda.
Fascinating. Do you have any clues as to the identity of this remarkable woman?
Yes, we have a name. Alicia Vomacht Deathstalker.
Well, I didn't see that one coming. You've given me much to think about, Dr. Ramirez. But it's not why I came here. Where are the 12 survivors?
This way.
He led them through more corridors as he talked.
The 12 survivors are kept in a holding area attached to the maze. It appeared quite literally out of nowhere, an outgrowth of the maze, because it was needed.
There are those who have suggested the Madness Maze is alive, and quite possibly aware.
It's alien. It could be anything.
Oh, the possibilities.
All 12 are imprisoned behind four screens. The shields allow nothing in or out. We haven't been able to come up with anything that can affect these screens.
Then how do you feed the survivors?
Oh, we don't. They haven't eaten or drunk anything in 200 years. And that's just the beginning of how altered they are. I should warn you, you'll find just being this close to the maze disturbing. You'll experience a constant feeling of being watched and studied, or weighed in judgment, and not by the survivors. In this, as in everything else we do here, the maze watches us all.
Yes, we feel it too. It is disturbing.
Finn shot a quick glance at the robot, and then decided not to pursue the matter.
Can we communicate with the 12?
We can talk with them, but I don't know that what we get is actually communication. We're almost there, Sir Gerundol, and soon you'll know why we've kept these abominations secret for so long. The four shields the maze provides are a blessing and a protection for all humanity. It is my fervent hope that they will never be lowered. Or at least not until the rest of humanity has evolved to a point where we have some hope dealing with these creatures.
Ramirez gave Finn a hard look.
I have to ask, Sir Gerundol, what are your intentions towards the 12?
I haven't decided yet. That's why I came all this way, to see them in person. But they could be weapons we can use against the Terror or other enemies.
Like Donald Corcoran. He'd make an excellent weapon.
Mouth is open, Doctor. Should be shut.
And then they rounded a final corner. And there the 12 were, imprisoned behind shimmering fields of energy.
Now I should warn you that...
Finn raised his hand for Ramirez to be silent. He walked slowly forwards, alone. He had no intention of sharing this moment with anyone. He walked slowly down the aisle, peering into each cell, drinking in the terrible miracles the maze had wrought in their merely mortal flesh. They were everything he had hoped for, and worse. 12 men and women, kept alive and suffering and crazy for 200 years. not eating or drinking, because they had risen above such human needs. He looked at them, and some of them looked back. They were glorious and awful, magnificent and appalling. Sick dreams given shape and form, and thrust unwillingly into the waking world. Finn decided he didn't feel disturbed. He felt invigorated. He slowly retraced his steps, stopped in front of the first cell, and gestured for the others to come forward and join him.
I have to thank you, Dr. Ramirez. In all my years, I have never seen anything like this. A truly unique experience. I could watch them for hours and never grow tired. Tell me, have they always been like this? Have they changed at all in 200 years?
Not according to the files left by my predecessors.
Ramirez preferred to look at Finn rather than what was in the cell.
This is how they emerged from the Madness Maze, each one entirely singular and horribly self-sufficient. Apart from one, they haven't slept at all in 2 centuries. No normal mind could survive under such conditions. But then, these creatures aren't in any way normal.
Ramirez turned and looked, almost unwillingly, into the first cell, and the others followed his gaze. The cell contained 2 survivors, a man and a woman, joined together into one body. A large, horribly white creature, with 4 arms and 4 legs, and 1 oversized head with too many eyes. It crawled slowly around its featureless enclosure, like a giant insect. The single mouth spoke a language that made no sense, and all the eyes moved in different directions.
Not much of a weapon, is it? Sometimes it walks on the walls and the ceiling, and sometimes it sings a song that makes any listener's ears bleed. But that's about it.
Oh, well, early days yet.
In the next cell, the occupant had been turned inside out, all down one side. It sat very still in the middle of its cell and didn't respond to any movements outside the forescreen. The exposed organs were crimson and purple, pulsing with blood, wet and shiny. The single lung expanded and contracted smoothly. Sharp bone horns stuck out of the exposed gray matter of the brain. Where the genitals should have been, there was only a twitching red mass. Tears ran steadily down the normal half of the face.
Is it in pain?
It doesn't respond to questions. Either way, we have no way of reaching past the forescreen to help. According to my files, it hasn't moved an inch in 200 years. God alone knows what it's thinking.
Why would the maze do something like that? What purpose could it serve?
I told you, the maze is alien.
In the next cell, a man ran back and forth impossibly quickly, his movements almost a blur. He pounded on the walls with his fists. His mouth was stretched in an endless silent scream, his eyes utterly mad.
He can hear the whole empire thinking, but he can't shut any of it out, even for a moment. He doesn't even know who he is anymore, his identity crushed under the weight of so many others.
Finn looked at Dr. Happy.
Could you help him?
I could have a lot of fun trying.
The next cell held a man who'd torn his own eyes out. Blood streamed endlessly down his jerking cheeks from the empty red sockets. But his wounded head turned unerringly to follow Finn as he approached the cell's forescreen. When Finn stopped and looked in, the blind man came forward to face him.
I have to keep tearing them out.
Because they keep growing back.
I see things. Terrible things. I see other planes, other dimensions, and other realities. I see the awful things that live there. Twisting and turning. The awful things they want to do if they could only find their way here. I have seen the answers to humanity's oldest questions. And secrets we were never meant to know. And I can't stop seeing. I tear my eyes out.
Finn backed away despite himself. In the next cell, the occupant was constantly changing. It stood very still, a blur of movement from one moment to the next, as it became a woman, became a man, became a child, became someone else. Short and tall, fat and thin, every race and color of humanity, everyone and everything, forever changing.
We don't know whether any of those are real people, whether they're copies of people from other worlds or alternate time-track versions of the original person, such as the Blessed Hazel Dark is supposed to have produced, or whether these people are just generated from the original's imagination. None of them have ever stayed around long enough to be questioned. And before you ask, recording devices don't operate through the force screen. None of our instruments will. We have no way of running tests on any of the survivors. I'm not sure whether that's for their protection or ours.
Don't be defeatist, Doctor. One idea has already occurred to me. But let us press on, press on.
The occupant of the next cell was fast asleep, curled up into a fetal ball, floating some 2 feet above the floor. Behind his closed eyelids, his eyes moved constantly.
He's been sleeping and dreaming for 200 years. What can his dreams be like after so long away from reality? We don't know if he'll ever wake up or what he might be able to do when he does. Perhaps he's dreaming himself sane.
The next cell contained a homicidal psychopath of such relentless ferocity that even Finn was impressed. The maze survivor raged back and forth across his cell, murdering an endless number of people who seemed to appear out of nowhere just to die and then vanish again. The killer's face was purple with rage as he battered people to death with his bare hands, or strangled them, or tore them limb from limb.
Again, we don't know whether the other people are real or not, but he's been killing them non-stop in increasingly nasty and inventive ways for 200 years. If the cell force screens ever do go down, the very first thing we're going to do is shoot that bloodthirsty bastard with every gun we've got.
Oh, I don't know. He has possibilities.
Going to throw him at the Terror, are you? Oh, yes. He'll be a lot of use against something that eats planets.
Finn looked at Ramirez.
Now, Doctor. Who knows what other abilities any of these people might have outside their cells? Even the Blessed Owen didn't become a living god immediately. He had to grow into his powers over time.
In the next cell, a woman sat cross-legged, smiling at nothing. Her eyes were fixed on something far away.
She's been smiling non-stop for 2 centuries. Never been known to speak or move, but one thing every scientist who's seen her agrees on is that that's a really disturbing smile. Like she knows something nobody else knows.
Oh, I've seen a lot of that. Trust me, it doesn't mean anything.
The next occupant all but filled his cell, a huge, dark, fleshy mass that pressed against the walls and floor and ceiling, but held back from touching the force screen. It had no discernible human details, just a great mass, slowly moving.
Apparently he looked perfectly normal when he went into the cell, but he's been growing steadily for 200 years. Hopefully he'll stop once he's completely filled all the space available.
And if he doesn't?
That's up to the maze.
In the next cell, a woman slowly faded in and out of reality, disappearing and returning, silently screaming for help. She reached out her hands to the people outside her cell, begging for them to do something.
She can see us, but she can't hear us. We don't know where she goes to, or how she comes back, or how to keep her here. Whatever powers she hoped to find in the maze, I can't believe this was it.
Finn found the occupant of the final cell the most disturbing, mostly because the occupant looked exactly like Finn Durandal. The two Finns stared at each other in silence for a while. The double was exact, down to the tiniest details of face, stance, and clothing. He smiled amiably back at Finn.
Takes a bit of getting used to, doesn't it? I become anyone who looks at me, anyone at all. And not just the exterior. I am you, inside and out. I know everything you know, including all the things no one else is supposed to know.
The original Finn raised an elegant eyebrow.
A telepath, I take it. Perhaps. Or perhaps nothing so crude. I am you in every way that matters. If you were to die, I could step into your life and take it over, and no one would be able to tell the difference. I doubt that. It's a matter of style, you see. I know everything you're afraid of, Finn. And you're afraid of so many things deep down, aren't you? Come on, you can admit it to yourself. Admit that you're afraid you're not strong enough and smart enough to do all the things that have to be done. Admit that you worry constantly about being found out. Admit that you're scared you have no heart. I'm not afraid of that. I glory in it.
He turned his back on the double and walked back up the aisle. The others followed him out of the aisle and back around the corner into the steel corridor, leaving the cells and their occupants behind. Finn then stopped and stood still and thought silently for a long time, and none of the others cared to interrupt him.
They're all secure. We don't have to worry about any of them escaping. The maze knows what it's doing.
Just as well. If any of them weren't crazy to begin with, they sure as hell are now, after all they've endured. But there are security cameras covering the aisle in this corridor, 24 hours a day, just in case. Not that we have any way of stopping them if they do get out. It's just to give the rest of us a good running start to get safely off planet.
Finn looked at the shub robot.
You have no ideas on how to penetrate the force screens?
Not at present. Though I feel I should point out that even if we could develop such an ability, I very much doubt we would be able to control or contain the 12 survivors afterwards. They represent a level of power beyond anything we have encountered, apart from Owen and his people.
Finn was still frowning thoughtfully.
But you do have teleport capability. Could you perhaps teleport items in or out of the cells?
We are considering the possibility.
You never said anything about that to me.
You never asked.
Finn turned to Dr. Happy.
I'm leaving you here, Doctor. Learn everything that can be learned about the 12 survivors, and then let your mind run wild along its usual appalling paths. Let it run free. I will see to it that you have a completely free hand here. So no experiment should be considered too controversial, too expensive, or too dangerous. Think the unthinkable. But you are forbidden to use any of the scientific staff here as subjects for whatever drugs you develop, on pain of me getting really upset with you. If you reach a stage where you need subjects, I'll supply them. And Doctor, if Shub does find a way to gain access to the 12 through teleportation, feel free to do any damn thing you like to them, as long as it doesn't involve any risk of their escaping.
Dr. Happy nodded, beaming widely. Finn turned to Dr. Ramirez.
I can see the objections rising to your lips, Doctor, but they will do you no good. Parliament has given me complete control over this whole establishment, mainly because no one else wants it. If you even try to impede the good doctor in any way, I'll let him have you as a subject. Concentrate on your own work and all will be well. I shall expect regular reports and updates on everything that happens here. I need to know why these 12 survived when so many others died. In the meantime, Hayden is now officially under full quarantine. I'll have 2 Star Cruisers posted here to ensure you're protected from outside influences. And if any investigative journalists should manage to sneak their way in here, you have my permission to shoot them on sight.
He turned to the blue steel robot of Shub.
Teleportation has to be the key. Work on ways to get things into those cells, and indeed, into the bodies of the 12. But be very careful about taking anything out. I don't want to risk losing any of our subjects.
We shall cherish them. All that lives is holy.
So I'm repeatedly told.
What if we can't learn anything useful from the 12? I mean, after all, my predecessors have been studying them for 200 years to little effect.
Finn considered the question, and then smiled.
The answer would seem to be obvious. I'll just have to send more people through the madness maze until it produces some survivors you can work with.
Ramirez looked at him, aghast.
But you'd lose thousands of people. Maybe hundreds of thousands.
Oh, there's never any shortage of fools.
Sometime later, in the House of Parliament on Logris, King Douglas sat in his throne as Speaker and watched with a dull, helpless anger as the members voted to dismantle the regulatory committee he'd set up to monitor the increasingly powerful Transmutation Board. Douglas couldn't honestly say he was surprised. It was just the latest in a series of moves that proved Parliament was now dominated, if not actually controlled, by outside interests these days. Searching for something, anything to shore up their ebbing power and influence, the members were desperate for support, and many were almost openly for sale, or at least for rent. Douglas had tried to contribute something to the debate, but the outcome was a foregone conclusion, and everyone there knew it. Besides, as Speaker and as King, Douglas's position was not what it had once been. He was no longer the respected new force on the throne. He had been betrayed and sidelined and made irrelevant by the changing new order. Still, everyone remained very polite to him, because he had been a paragon and was still a Campbell, and you never knew. Douglas sat stiffly on his throne, overlooking the House as the members argued loudly over the next proposal.
The next matter I would like the House to address concerns the alien issue. It has been proposed that a law be passed requiring the licensing and control of all espers in the Empire, and especially on Logris.
Douglas would have smiled at that if he'd been in a smiling mood. This was the mice voting to bell the cat. But with public feelings against espers running so hot and high, Parliament had to do something, or at least be seen to be doing something. So, a bill that didn't have a hope in hell of being enforced, but would look good on the news channels. There had to be some members left in the House with guts enough to stand against the tide, and others who might yet be influenced by just the right words, but Douglas had no idea who they might be anymore. He hadn't realized how dependent he'd become on Anne to brief him, to do all the research and guide him through the treacherous undercurrents of modern politics. She'd known everything about ideas and trends and people, but now she was gone and working with the enemy. Douglas was doing his best to catch up on the ground he'd lost during his seclusion, but it was hard going, particularly when hardly anyone would agree to talk to him anymore, even on the most private and secure of lines. In politics, there was always the fear that defeat might be catching. Anne worked with Finn now. In fact, since his return from Hayden, the two were rarely seen in public apart. Neither of them had much time for Parliament these days, though. The Durandal rarely showed his face in the House, even though he was Imperial Champion, and officially still Douglas's bodyguard. And Anne only ever made her presence known from the shadows. Perhaps because the House was now such a tamed beast, it was beneath their notice. Douglas pushed the thought aside. He had to concentrate on those matters he could still influence. He made himself listen to the current speaker on the floor of the House. Joseph Wallace, head of the Transmutation Board, was politely thanking the House for its expressed support, and not quite gloating over his future plans, now that he didn't have Douglas's regulatory committee to hold him back. Wallace was tall and well set, with a blandly handsome face set off by golden tracings that followed the lines of his face. They gleamed very prettily, but Douglas thought it made the man look as though someone had painted graffiti on his face while he was asleep. Still, Wallace had good posture and a trained voice, and a commanding presence in an obvious sort of way.
I thank this House for the confidence it has placed in me. In turn, I commit the Transmutation Board to even greater endeavors. More useless planets shall be transformed from lifeless worlds to the building blocks of matter. Dross shall become gold, more goods, more food, more weapons for humanity in the hour of its greatest need.
Most of the members stood up, hoping to be noticed by the news cameras. Douglas made a mental note of the few that didn't. Wallace was saying all the right things, saying what the public wanted to hear, and it was a brave man who'd stand in the way of something for nothing. Wallace looked about him, smiling smugly.
And I can assure this house that the board will take its responsibilities very seriously when it comes to making dangerous alien planets safe. Transmutation can and will ensure that humanity never need feel threatened by alien forces again.
The alien section of the house was noticeably silent. Like Douglas, they hadn't missed that Wallace had been referring specifically to humanity all along, and not to the Empire. The treasures to be provided by the Transmutation Board were not for everyone, it seemed. Some species had already stopped sending their representatives to the house, and more were leaving as the mood in the house became increasingly, openly xenophobic. The Swart Alfair of that enigmatic planet Mog Moor had already declared their world off-limits to all human ships, though their own craft still traveled the Empire, openly defying pure humanity to do anything about it. The Espers had also withdrawn their representative, even before the Esper Control Bill was mooted. Telepaths and precogs are better than most at telling which way the wind is blowing. The clone representative still held his seat, smiling just a little smugly, and the robot from Shub was always there, though it had little to say these days. No one objected to their presence. Everyone knew they were under Finn Durandal's protection. Joseph Wallace finally finished his speech and left on a wave of triumph. The honorable members waited until they were sure he was gone, and then switched off their smiles and sat down again. In a small private room in the warren of offices at the rear of the house, Joseph Wallace talked with Finn Durandal. Wallace was still flushed with his success and wanted to boast and strut and recount his triumph, but he was finding it hard going under the Durandal's cold, ironic gaze. Finn sat slumped loosely in his chair and listened while Wallace strode up and down before him, and the more Finn listened, the less Wallace felt like talking. He gathered his anger to give him strength and pulled old resentments around him like armor. He was a member in high standing in pure humanity, after all, and for all his undoubted influence, the Durandal was still only Imperial champion.
With the King's precious committees swept away, I run the Transmutation Board. My word is law now, and no one can say me nay. Planets live or die at my whim. I answer to pure humanity and no one else. So you can wipe that look off your face and forget whatever threats you've been rehearsing. Any hold you might have had over me vanished when Rose Constantine ran off and left you high and dry. You can't bully me anymore. I'm protected.
They all say that.
Wallace drew himself up to his full height and puffed out his chest.
You can't threaten pure humanity. We are the way of the future.
Perhaps you're not the only player in the game.
He rose gracefully to his feet, and Wallace fell back a step in spite of himself. Finn strolled over to the window and beckoned for Wallace to join him. Wallace did so, reluctantly, and looked down at the street scene below. Everything seemed quiet. People came and went about their business, paying no attention to two of the most important men in the Empire looking down on them. Finn languidly indicated a man standing beside a vidphone booth.
Do you recognize that gentleman in the rather tacky green cloak, Joseph?
Yes, that's Brian Page. My immediate superior in pure humanity. I wasn't aware he had any business at the house today.
He doesn't. He's here because I required it of him. Poor Brian proved even more intransigent than you, and he was very rude to me. So now he's come here, just to provide you with an object lesson.
He waved cheerfully to the man down in the street, and Brian Page, his mind possessed and controlled by an elf, smiled cheerfully back and cut his throat with his own dagger. He waved to Wallace as the blood gushed down his chest, and he stood there smiling and waving until all the strength had gone out of his body, and then the elf finally let go of him and he fell down dead in the street. Wallace fell back from the window, clutching at his tight collar, fighting to get his breath. He could feel sweat running down his face and pins and needles in his suddenly numb hands. Finn took him companionably by the arm and steered him into a chair.
Oh, my. Oh, don't faint, Joseph. I haven't finished with you yet.
How did you do that? What in God's name are you?
I am a man with many friends, or at least allies. What you just watched is real power, Joseph, not political influence or philosophical rhetoric to sway a crowd or inflame a mob. My power is the only power that matters. Control over life and death. No one is safe from me, no matter how highly placed they may think they are. So do as you're told, Joseph, or I'll replace you with someone who will.
What is it you want?
He met Finn's gaze squarely. He had that much pride left.
Nothing that should upset you too much, Joseph. Just spread a little dread and suffering wherever I direct. You touched on it yourself in your little speech in the house. I want to use the transmutation board as a weapon. Not just against alien planets, but against any world that dares to stand against us. We can stamp out rebellion at the root by wiping clean any planet that defies us. I think your first action as head of the board should be to send the transmutation engines to Viramond. No need to actually do anything just yet. Just the presence of those huge engines in orbit should be enough to influence their thinking along the right paths. And after Viramond, well, I'll make you a list of all those worlds whose honorable members seem to be a bit slow to grasp the realities of today's political situation. It'll do no harm to remind people of their true place in the order that's coming.
I can't use the engines as a threat. The House would order my arrest and take the board back under their control.
Oh, no, they won't. They'll just spend all their time arguing over what course to take until it's far too late. I'll see to that.
But Viramond?
Wallace would have liked to wipe away the sweat he could feel on his face, but he couldn't afford to do anything that might be seen as a sign of weakness.
Viramond still has a fond place in the hearts of the people. I don't think they'd stand for a threat to the homeworld of the Blessed Owen. Oh,
but the current Deathstalkers aren't nearly so beloved. Not after what Lewis did. They are our enemies, Joseph, and we must never be afraid to strike at our enemies. And there's always the chance that a threat against his family might just be enough to tempt dear Lewis out of whatever hole he's crept into. He always was a most honorable and sentimental fellow. I miss him, I really do. Now, off you go, Joseph, and arrange all the things that need arranging. And don't worry, I'm sure I'll be able to find the time for us to have another of these nice little chats, possibly even sooner than you think. I do so enjoy explaining things to you.
Wallace didn't quite run out of the room, followed all the way by Finn's terrible smile.
Deathstalker Return is continued on the next CD.